Greetings. Welcome back to another Truth Factor discussion. It's good to have everyone with us here today. We're about to jump into our study of Ecclesiastes, picking up with chapter 10, verse 3 is where we'll start our discussion. We'll back up and read a little bit. See everybody on the screen there. We have with us today Tom, Brian, and Paul, or Brian, Paul, and Tom, whatever order you prefer there. The only one missing is Brendan. He has responsibility once a month where he teaches a ladies' Bible class, and so he is absent today because of that. We have several who have joined us. Go ahead.
Actually, he contacted us and said that that class got canceled because he has COVID.
Oh, no, I missed that one. Okay. Yeah. Well.
So, but he's still not with us.
That's his own fault. He put the ladies' Bible class ahead of ours, and he reaped the consequences of it.
Consequences of it.
Bless his heart. Okay. Well, thanks for letting me know. We'll keep Brendan in our prayers, of course. Let's see. Joining us so far through comments that we have seen, we've got Michael Davis with us, Jerry Wilcox, and Aline Hines, Gregory, good to see you as well. Gregory Hinckley. May have to do a mind reboot here in just a moment. All right, let's see. That's weird. Okay. So let's go ahead and start with our study. Before we do, let me remind you, of course, if you're viewing this through our YouTube channel, then you can use the chat area there for your questions or comments. If you're viewing this through our Facebook page, you can comment on the live video there and we'll see it. And kind of just as a quick share, real quick, wrong button. That's how you can contact us. We've got questions at truthfactorlive.com. You can email us individually there, as you'll see on the screen. There's a text number you could text. I don't check that very often, but you could throw us something that way and we might see it at some point. Okay. So with that being said, let's go ahead and jump right in. Let's start our reading, though, with Ecclesiastes chapter 10. We'll start reading in verse 1. And let's go ahead and read through verse 5. It's not a great stopping point. And then we'll talk about 3, 4, and 5, and then we'll go on from there. So, Mr. Paul, let's see. Would you mind reading for us those verses there, 1 through 5?
Sure. Ecclesiastes 10, 1 through 5. I've got the New King James open here. Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give off a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left. Even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom, and he shows everyone that he is a fool. If the spirit of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your post, for conciliation pacifies great offenses. There is an evil I have seen under the sun, as an error protruding from the ruler.
Go ahead and read through 7.
Folly is set in great dignity, while the rich sit in a lowly place. I have seen servants on horses, while princes walk on the ground like servants.
All righty, let's see. That's not the greatest of divisions, but it kind of gets us into that area there. So, Paul, backing up there to verse number 3, as we go through here, this particular section there, it kind of seems like if we were just to pull one thing from verse number 3, it kind of would be that everybody's going to know that you're a fool if you're a fool.
I think that's right. He contrasts the wise and the foolish in verse 2, and it's kind of an unusual statement about a wise man's heart is at his right hand, a fool's heart at his left. I think, you know, the right hand is generally known in Bible times as a place of honor. The left hand might not be quite such an honorable thing. And so I think you're right when we look at verse 3. If the fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom, and he shows everyone that he is a fool. A fool does not have the wisdom to hide the fact that he's a fool.
Yeah. Any other thoughts or comments on that?
Yeah, you know, you talk about he doesn't have the wisdom. One of the things that makes him a fool, at least in my mind, is he doesn't care. You know, I mean, a lot of times the way they're conducting themselves, you know, they know they're different. They say things and they're doing things that are outlandish and so on. Quite honestly, they don't care. You know, they don't care what you think. They don't, and so on and so forth. And it's reflected. It's reflected in who they are. And by the way, decisions that they make, things that they do, you know, like for example, yeah. like for example, getting a tattoo on your forehead, or on your neck, and then about 20, 30 years later, you know, when you say, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Now you're stepping into art, you know, art may choose to do that. Yeah, I understand.
You know, John, I was looking at this and also thinking, just maybe from experience and from some of the things that are said here, that a man can be wise, and maybe not everyone knows that he's wise, but the fool, everybody knows. So,
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, hey, I noticed Stephen Harper's hanging out with Michael today.
Oh, there you go.
Hello, Stephen Harper. Go ahead, Tom. Sorry.
I was going to say, you know, we've all heard the expression, you know, better to say nothing and let people think that you're ignorant or foolish than to open your mouth and remove all doubt.
So. Well, Brian, what's your thought about verse 4?
There's some Bibles that kind of make this as a transitional statement, because we're going to talk in verse 5 and on about the idea of the rulers, that if a fool is the ruler, that kind of catches against you. This kind of goes back even to the last chapter, whenever he was talking about the idea of the value of wisdom. And then he says, yeah, but a little bit of foolishness can destroy a lot of wisdom. And that's kind of the nature of the battle of wisdom and foolishness, which is, you know, one of the great struggles in the world today. And I guess, you know, it might be worth even saying, how do you define the fool in the scripture? You know, there's a lot of nice definitions. I was just looking at some notes I'd written down out of Proverbs, where it'll tell us things like, you know, if wisdom is the fear of the Lord, then the fool is the person who has no fear of the Lord. And it says things like the fool is a man full of self-confidence. He doesn't love the truth. You know, what's interesting about these statements is in the New Testament, we get a lot of terms like this. You know, like I was thinking of not loving the truth, 2 Thessalonians, where he says that there are people that don't have a love of the truth, you know, and the circumstances there. The person who doesn't love being rebuked or corrected, one of my favorites, though, Proverbs 17:24, wisdom is in the sight of him who has understanding, but the eyes of a fool are on the ends of the earth. And I really think that substantial statement is that the concept is that a fool only sees what's right in front of him. A fool doesn't think about things like consequences or long-term or eternal circumstances. One of my favorite parables that's kind of a strange parable is the parable of the unrighteous steward, where the unrighteous steward, you know, is about to be fired for having, you know, not been careful. And so he says, well, hey, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make sure that people receive me. And so he goes out and settles all these debts, you know, at a disadvantage. And the master actually says, you know, that's good thinking. You know, that was a smart move, because you're thinking about your long-term definition. And Jesus says, you know, look at this guy. Even people in the world can sometimes figure out wisdom, where the sons of the kingdom kind of miss the idea that it should be all about these things. I say all this to say, coming back against this, you know, the idea of the fool and defining the fool here is kind of important, because what he wants to do in a broader sense is to say, on occasion, everybody can be the fool. A wise man can be a fool. And all it takes is a little bit of foolishness, and you can wreck any kind of wisdom. So you're before the king, for example, don't demonstrate your foolishness. Be, you know, and I was looking at one translation where it talks about the calmness is the thing that you want to demonstrate. Don't leave your post, you know, be peaceful. We have a saying that says that, you get more flies with honey than vinegar. You know, you peacefulness is the way to bring about the best results. Never let your temper get the best of you.
The ESV says, do not leave your place, for calmness will lay great offense to rest. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, how often is it that, you know, you say you've got a leader, you know, apply this to, a working position. You know, something is said to you immediately and you just get angry and you walk away from your job. Rather than trying to resolve it or calm down the situation. And, you know, I mean, in the case of don't leave your post, you know, you may be talking about a soldier who's guarding the city. And because you get angry and walk away, you have made the city vulnerable at that time. And so I think there's a little bit of that that's associated with what he's saying here.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
The conciliation is calmness, you know. And your calmness can sometimes pacify the situation, the anger or even the foolishness of the king. And so on, the fact that you're remaining calm, it can lead to the dialogue necessary or the action, you know, a calming down, and then it gets resolved.
That's one of the things you got to teach your children, you know, and set an example for them so they see it's better to not get to that rage, but just think slowly and calmly through situations, especially when you're young. And well, it may not be always the case, but I know that as I've gotten older, I've learned a bit more patience and control, you know, when not to, okay, you might want to disagree with me on this, but when not to talk and when to talk. But I was worse when I was younger. And, but some people, as they get older, they get grumpier. So I don't know which way it works. So, but Brian, we have two comments. So we've got one from Gregor. So do you want to read that one? Do you see it?
I sure do. Gregor says, okay. The right brain, the left hand, is the emotional creative side. The left brain, the right hand, tends to be logical. Brings new meaning to the deception of the heart. That's a really neat comment, Gregor, especially because I've never considered that, especially with that statement earlier on the left hand and the right hand. But, you know, it is all about emotion, isn't it? Again, one of those things I was looking at the fool notes is that the fool rages. You know, the fool is, his emotions are out of control, you know, and what's interesting about that, you know, in James chapter 1, you know, the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. One of the characteristics about putting on Christ is to put on a person who's not driven by their emotions. They're driven by their understanding. That's such a consistent statement in the in Ecclesiastes and in Proverbs. Don't be driven by your emotions, and not just anger, but even like Song of Solomon says, you know, don't awaken love until it's time. You know, even keeping emotions like that under control. Guard your heart. You know, all of these different admonitions that come out of these passages want us to understand that only fools are driven by their emotions. Only fools are people that make their choices based on what feels right. And as the Proverbs say, there's a way that feels right, but it leads to death. And this is a consistent characteristic of the wise man and the fool. And of course, we live in a society today. I know, Gregor, this wasn't entirely your point, but I'm on a rant, so let me rant. We live in a society today that says, follow your heart, you know, do what your heart desires, you know, let your heart guide you. And the Bible says, dumb. The Bible says, fool, don't be driven by your heart. Don't do what your heart, because going back to what Gregor said about deceitfulness, Jeremiah 17, the heart is deceitful above all things. In other words, not that you're a wicked, evil person on the inside, more that your heart is always going to lead you astray because it's not calculating things like understanding and wisdom and reason. It's just feelings are a thing. So even going back to verse 4, the king rebukes you, you're going to be angry. Don't react. Just be calm, and that'll take care of everything.
Yeah, that's a good point. You remind me of that wise saying that even says only fools fall in love. Wait, that's not biblical. Sorry. That's not, yeah. That's, I think it's
almost.
It's almost out. So let me touch on something real quick. I need to bring in, I want to bring in Mike's comment, just kind of adding to that. He says, the soft answer turned away wrath. Yeah. Very good point. Let's see. So you mentioned the different translations where they kind of put a break and everything in the text here. I'll bring up an illustration. The ESV kind of does that. It makes a break here at verse 5 and stitches 5 and 6 and 7 together with the thought, and we'll talk about that here in a minute because we've already read it. But then verses 8 and following, it breaks down into kind of the indented poetry or saying, you know, type forms. Whereas the New King James that we have up lays it out a little bit differently, though. Okay. For whatever that's worth. It is interesting, and you can see the struggles in trying to figure out the contextual layout of something like Ecclesiastes. And Proverbs is even more challenging at times. Some sections kind of lend to a more common thread, and then you get chapters that's like they're just putting in sayings throughout there and everything. So I failed to silence my phone earlier, so. Okay. And one more comment real quick. This one's coming in from Andy Walker. Andy, or Walter, my apologies. I struggle with the idea of not following your heart. Since I struggle with vertigo, I really have to follow. I really have to follow a part to keep from falling when walking. Interesting. Okay. All right. Interesting thought there. So, and this, you do have a lot of people that kind of hold the idea of follow your heart. But I don't think that's really what is being described there. I think sometimes with proper raising, there are certain situations you've got a gut feeling that something is right or wrong. And you might not be able to at the moment to put your finger on what the situation is, what is the cause of that. But there's something inside your gut that says, or maybe as Paul would say, your conscience, that says it's better not to go this route. And maybe that's kind of the scope. You'll hear people say, follow your heart. But it's not always reliable, not always trustworthy because of the way it's been trained and fashioned and everything. In the next section there, or the next three verses, let's go ahead and bring this back up. And let me kind of walk through this here for just a moment. You'll notice with this, he says that there's an evil I have seen under the sun. This is what Paul read a while ago, and an error proceeding from the ruler. Okay, so what is this evil? What is this error? Well, here's the picture he paints. He says, folly is set in great dignity, while the rich set in a lowly place. Okay, now the ESV in its translation reads it as folly is set in many high places, and the rich set in low places. I have seen servants on horses and princes walk on the ground like servants. It almost appears upside down or backwards. Normally, princes would be on the horses and the servants would be walking. But he sees situations where that is reverse, where something that is as folly is given great dignity, but yet the rich and the wealthy, they are the ones that are in low places. Now, would we equate, and I'll throw this to y'all, this idea while the rich sit in lowly places as maybe humble places brought about by foolish behavior? You know, maybe something to that effect there. What are your thoughts on this? Let's start with, Paul, you read it. What's your thoughts?
I was thinking, looking at this, that you would think that to be into an exalted position, into high office or something like that, you would have to be pretty wise to get there. And I'm not making a political comment about anyone or our situation, just that it's been true always.
There's no foolishness in politics.
Is that there's not always sometimes a fool can rise to great power in high office, and where the wise man is not recognized. And sometimes it's the, he talks about there in verse 7, slaves riding on horses and princes walking like slaves. Sometimes under the sun in this life, things are just turned around backwards. The wise aren't always the ones making the decisions, and the fools aren't always the ones who are just doing what they're told. But instead, sometimes, again, things just get turned around so they're not like they ought to be.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, you know, a couple of things that come to my mind. You know, typically, you know, when we discuss the rich, warnings from a scriptural standpoint, typically what we come to mind is the warnings against wealth. You know, those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and so on. But we've emphasized all, if you're going to give an accurate description of the Bible on the subject, it's not wrong to be wealthy. And the truth is oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes the wealthy, the reason they're wealthy is because they've made wise decisions. You know, and they've done the right things all along. So you're looking at this reverse, like what Paul was talking about, you know, the topsy-turvy or the upside down. You've got the folly of said, and I said, the New King James talks about great dignity. Mine has a footnote, which has an exalted position. So you've got the foolish ones who are leader, and they won't listen to the ones who have struggled all their life and pulled themselves up from their bootstraps, and they've made wise decisions and they've learned from their mistakes. And they're the ones that are, as we talked about last week, you know, they're the ones that are going to deliver the city, you know, when the oppressor comes.
Yeah.
You know, even though that was described as a poor man, he used his wisdom. So you've got that. And the same thing with the, you know, the servants on horses, you know, princes walking, the topsy-turvy. You've also got, I see in that also the idea of consequences. There's consequences to your actions. When leaders make foolish decisions, not always, but there's times where they pay a price for their stupidity. And, yeah. And biblically, when I think about a servant on a horse, I think about Esther and Mordecai. You know, Mordecai gets exalted.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets exalted, yeah. And he gets put into that position. He was a servant. Now he gets highly exalted, while Haman, you know, the arrogant leader. Well, he gets to be the hangman. You know, by the time he gets done.
Yeah.
So I mean, it backfired. Yeah.
You really caught my attention. You said servant on a horse. My brain heard sermon on a horse. And so I perked up and thought, what is he going to be talking about?
Well, you know what? you know what? Mordecai was a sermon on that horse, because the king parading him through the street. This is what's going to happen if you are honored by the king. So, I mean, hey, it was a sermon.
Okay.
I said sermon. All right. On to our show.
Speak of sermons and on horses, I think of Michael Davis. And Michael Davis has a comment, so let's bring this in. We're all about segues here. Michael says, if we let the mind of Christ be our only mind, we're never fools but wise. Good point. Colossians 3:16-17. And then Michael goes on to say, are we Christians to be peculiar? To the world and to us, things are opposite of what should be. Therefore, we seek to please God, wise, and not man, fools. And that's a good point. When Peter uses that phrase that we are a peculiar people, we are his own special possession. That means that we are to be separate, apart, sanctified, different in our behavior and our thoughts from the world. We're to be wise and not fools, like God himself is wise. It's a good point, Michael. I appreciate that. Yeah. All right, let's see, where are we now? So in this next section, and we'll start here in just a moment. Now, Tom, I'll have you to read here in just a second, beginning in verse 8. Now, let's go ahead and read down through verse 17 here in the text. But in the next section here, there are a series of things that are laid out there that presents potential dangers in certain jobs and occupations, which isn't so, I don't know if it's necessarily a warning in each of these, but showing how foolishness, when it rears its head within a person's life, there are obvious times where it'll come back on, it'll come upon the person with consequences. And maybe, I think last week, Brian, you and I were talking about it before we started our study, and that's kind of maybe the idea through the section of consequences. You know, we'll be looking at here in a minute. But let's go ahead and have Tom to read the passage for us, verses 8 through 14, if you would, sir.
Okay, all right. And again, from the New King James Version, you read there, he who digs a pit will fall into it, and whoever breaks through a wall will be bitten by a serpent. He who quarries stones may be hurt by them, and he who splits wood may be endangered by it. The axe is dull, one does not sharpen the edge, then he must use more strength, but wisdom brings success. A serpent may bite when it is not charmed. The babbler is no different. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of fools shall swallow him up. The words of his mouth begin with foolishness, and the end of his talk is raving madness. A fool also multiplies words. No man knows what he is to be. Who can tell him what will be after him? Is it 3:16?
Right. Let's switch over to Brian now and have him to go 15 through the end of the chapter. I kind of changed that up a little bit, so we'll split it here.
All right, and I'll continue reading. I'll be reading from the New King James Version, 15 through 20. The labor of fools wearies them, for they do not even know how to go into the city. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child and your princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles and your princes feast at the proper time, for strength and not for drunkenness. Because of laziness, the building decays, and through idleness of hands, the house leaks. A feast is made for laughter, and wine makes merry, but money answers everything. Do not curse the king, even in your thought. Do not curse the rich, even in your bedroom. For a bird of the air may carry your voice, and a bird in flight may tell the matter.
Okay. Well, what do we think about this? Tom, let's see, you started our reading here, so let me come back to you as we started the first of the section. So what is intriguing about this would be the list of warnings there, going back there to verse 8. For instance, if you have someone, he warns, if you dig a pit, be careful. If you would, I'm going to add a little bit to it. If you dig a pit, be careful, you may fall into it. If you're going to break through a wall, be careful, there might be a serpent within the wall. If you're going to be quarrying stones, be careful, they might fall on you. If you're going to be splitting wood, be careful, it might roll on you. I don't know. But does that kind of seem like the point he's making through there?
Yeah, I think among other things, you've got the idea, like you've mentioned several times, you've got the idea of caution, you know, being cautious as you do whatever you do. But, you know, you could also tie this to, dealing with the folly of the previous verses and so on. In some of these instances, you know, why is he digging a pit? You know, is he digging a pit for his purpose or to entrap somebody else? And he gets caught by his own trap, you know, or those kind of things. You know, why is he breaking through a wall? Is it his wall, or is it somebody else's wall? And something happens when you get on the other side. So I see the idea of caution. Caution in the things that you do. I also see the idea of uncertainty, and you've got to be aware that things do happen. And incidentally, caution sometimes can help you in dealing with whatever those things are. And then you get back to the other ones. Those are even more just about caution. And so, especially in verse 9, things can happen. Be careful what you're doing. And I think that's applied in verse number 10, you know, when he gives the example of the axe, being dull. I mean, if you don't take the 2 minutes you don't take the 2 minutes or the 5 minutes to sharpen the axe before you start, you're going to be spending an extra 10 minutes doing the same work that had you used a little bit of wisdom and said, you know what? Yeah, this is an extra step, but it's sure going to save me a lot of time in the process. So this is just wise living. Wise living is what I see.
All right. Well, Brian, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't always understand exactly what we're talking about here in the text. And I'll say in the sense that I think Tom did a good job. One of the neat things about wisdom literature is that a lot of times you can pull it out of context and it still has a great value to you. And so I kind of question, what am I looking at the context? And I'll show you a couple of things. One of the things I've been thinking of is, does this connect back to the context in chapter 9 when he was saying that the battle isn't always to the swift and the race isn't, or I'm sorry, the battle isn't to the strong and the race isn't to the swift, time and chance kind of things, that sometimes people working hard fall in their pit. Sometimes people, you know, pushing down a wall, get bit by the snake, you know, cutting wood, you know, these are all things to say, sometimes things just happen, could be part of it. Or is he saying that if a fool digs a pit, he's going to fall in it? If a fool cuts the wood, he's going to get hurt. I'm not sure which passage I connected to, but what's valuable is to say, I think either one is a useful interpretation of what it might be. And again, that's one of the neat things about wisdom literature, is that not entirely sure if there's a flow of thought here or if we're just looking at parenthetical statements, but they're valuable either way. I think my opinion is verse 12 is a change again in theme. But I can't find any of the translators that agree with me. In other words, all the different translations I'm looking at, they all lump it all together. But I was thinking verse 12 might be a switch where we're kind of, again, going back to say the wise, the fool, you know, let's look at this one more time and think about this before we launch into 11 and 12, which are our, you know, building up to our penultimate statements, you know, our meaning of life statements. So, you know, I'm not sure. I don't have a good answer. Like I said, I have a lot of thoughts on this, but they're not as good as say what Tom had to say. So let's see what Paul does. Right.
Paul, any thoughts?
No. Boy, he sounds good.
Oh,
I don't hear you, Paul.
The voice of angels.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know that I have this exactly right, but. One thought I had was, and it would fit in with the theme of Ecclesiastes, is that sometimes you can put all your effort into something and it's not going to be entirely successful. I look at this, I see digging a pit would be hard work. Breaking through a wall would be hard work. Quarrying a stone would be hard work. Splitting logs with a sharp axe or a dull axe is hard work, harder with the dull axe. And so I was just looking at this thinking that sometimes even though you're putting all that you are into something, you don't see the earthly success from that. And sometimes there's even injury. I have a friend who is a very, very hard worker. He works on road crews and construction sites and things like that. And he's been hurt before. He had a crane fall on him. And he was working very hard, working very diligently, and just a bad thing happened. He survived that, and he's back to work and everything. But that's at least one point I see from this. But I agree with Brian. If this is exactly what it's talking about or not, I'm not sure.
I was just going to say, the bottom line in all this section, though, is the very last statement in verse 10, you know, wisdom brings success. I mean, chance happens, and you're not going to prevent all accidents. Things happen. But I tell you right now, if you use wisdom, you're going to have less accidents. You're going to accomplish more.
So. Yeah, I was wondering if maybe it would be good to look at that phrase where he says, but wisdom brings success, as kind of an ending statement for what we see as verses 8, 9, 10, you know. And then it kind of reaches out a little bit, if you would, to verse 11, you know, a little bit too. That in all these things, wisdom will bring success. There was two, so years ago, when I really got into decorating for the holiday time of the year that comes when it's really cold and everything, and people love me so much and give me a lot of presents and all that, you know, that time period. I got outside and I was hanging Christmas lights. And so one year I had a 6-foot step ladder and I grabbed up there, not quite like Chevy Chase in that Christmas movie, but I was, you know, using a hammer stuff. And so I had to go back inside the house. So I put my hammer on top of the 6-foot step ladder and went in the house. I came back out. Well, I needed to move my ladder over, pick the ladder up. The hammer fell off, hit me on the head. And then I did that the following Christmas, the next year as well. So, you know, there are a few times when you're just not thinking, you make stupid mistakes. And then when you do finally, there you go.
Wow, that explains a lot. That explains a lot about you.
It does, doesn't it? I had taken a course on electricity, AC/DC, when we first got married. And so this is where your brain says, I'm going to go on vacation while you do something important. And I opened the bottom of the dryer because the dryer wasn't heating. And I saw the element in there. And the dryer was plugged up and everything. It was running. And my mind was like, I wonder if that element is hot. Let me reach in there and touch it. And I burnt the bottom of my arm because it was grounded to the dryer there. So there are just times you do, the wisdom just goes for on vacation. And you do, and you have no success. So it could be, yeah. All right. that was shocking, wasn't it? Okay. Let's see. Comment, two of them. One comes in from Michael. Let's bring this up here real quick. He says, there's a father up above looking down in tender love, so be careful, little ones, what you do. Coming from the children's song. Yeah. Valid point. And then Jerry Wilcox says, like pulling weeds, they never seem to completely go away. Yeah. I'd like that illustration. Yeah. Feels like we're weeding through Ecclesiastes right now. That's weaving through Ecclesiastes, I guess. Okay. Verse 11. Let's bring this up here for just a moment. We kind of talked about this a minute, but I found this one interesting. He says, a servant may bite when it is not charmed. The babbler is no different. Now, here we kind of make a little bit different of connection. So I guess the thought, when you look at verse 11, you have a serpent, and the goal is to kind of charm the serpent. But when the serpent is not charmed, it is still dangerous. All right, I think about like a wild horse versus a tamed horse, maybe. And you've got to be careful because that serpent can still bite you when it's not yet charmed. But it's interesting, Brian, he makes that connection to a babbler.
I noticed that some translations, I even looked it up to see what it meant, that the word babbler just means the talker. And some think maybe it means the snake charmer, the person who's trying to charm the snake. And then some translations think talker means the fool, since the fool is known by his many words. And I see both as being a legitimate way of looking at this. I kind of like the idea better that he's talking about the charmer, to say, like I said, if the axe, you know, can bite the wood chopper, the snake can bite the charmer. I will say, is this one of the only times in the Bible where we talk about snake charmers? I can't think of another time, and that's kind of interesting that was a thing that they talked about. And let me ask, what is the practical application of being a snake charmer? That would be my other big question in life. You know, it seems to me that's a foolish profession from the start, but I don't know. I stay away from snakes.
Well, if you're Indiana Jones,
thing here in Oregon, we don't have snakes.
With snakes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing in Oregon. We don't have poisonous snakes here. So,
really?
On this side of Oregon. But Eastern Oregon is full rattlers. Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. They scared all the snakes away. So
Rotherham emphasized, is that it? Let me bring it up just so you'll see it, just for reference sake. I kind of like this translation. I think it's called Rotherham. Anyway, but anyway, he says, if a serpent will bite unless he is charmed, then there is nothing better for him that owneth the tongue. That's kind of a different reading of the text there. And also, let's look at the Holman Christian Standard Version. We've talked a little bit about that translation in the last couple of weeks, and it renders it as, if the snake bites before it is charmed, then there's no advantage for the charmer.
I read a few commentaries on this, John, trying to figure it out, and I don't think anybody made any more sense than we are. So.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not saying we're not making sense. I'm saying I don't think anyone had any better ideas than those already presented. So it's
why don't we start the TF commentaries?
Yeah.
That's kind of what these videos are in a roundabout way, whoever wants to watch them. Yeah. All right, let's see. So with that said, okay, so take that statement there, and let me come back to the New King James Translation. Tom, then look on into verse 12. Doesn't it kind of make sense to say this kind of goes along with verse 12, possibly?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in verse 11, he compared it to, like I said, the New King James uses the word babbler and so on.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, the whole point, I mean, put your mind in gear before you put your mouth in motion. James chapter 1 and in verse 19. Yeah. And so on. I mean, the words of the wise man's mouth are gracious. I mean, he chooses his words. He chooses his words, and he's going to say the right thing. And incidentally, gracious words does not necessarily mean not hurtful. You know, I mean, there are times they need to be hurtful. You know, I mean, they're truthful, but they're also presented. They're presented properly. You know, I've used the illustration before. You've got two different preachers. Both of them are preaching the exact same message. And let's use as an example, if you don't repent, you're going to hell. You know, and two different preachers, they can say the same thing, but you know by the demeanor of one and the way he words it, you know that he cares. Whereas the other one, it just sounds like he's self-absorbed, arrogant, those types of things. And so that's what I see in the wise man. He thinks about what to say and how to say it. But the lips of a fool, he just speaks, and the consequences are there.
Well, you know, Tom, I hadn't really thought about that in relation to preachers. Meaning verses 12 and 13. But when you think about what you just said, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up, the words of his mouth begin with foolishness, and the end of his talk is raving madness. I mean, we see this in a very generalized statement there, but there are a lot of areas in life where there are specific instances that could probably be defined by this type of behavior there.
Oh, yeah. You know, have you ever, you ever heard somebody that they say something wrong? And they get challenged by it. And rather than just saying, oh, I'm sorry, I was wrong, they try to defend their statement. And by the time they
misunderstood me. That's not what I said.
Yeah. And by the time they get done trying to explain what they were saying, it's raving madness. It's blown up, and it's even worse than it was in the beginning.
Well, look at verse 14. Speaking of preachers one more time, he says, let me bring this one up. A fool also multiply words. No one knows what is to be. Who can tell him what will be after him? And that doesn't really fit with preachers necessarily, but it's the whole scope of this. Any thoughts? Okay.
There is a thinking about this that I was reading, and I had trouble following it, that thinks this is talking about two different kinds of people. The serpent is one, and the charmer is another, and I had a hard time kind of following the reasoning of that. But
that's interesting. Let's see. Comment coming in real quick from Jerry. Let's see, there we go. When there, this is from Proverbs 10:19, he quotes, when there are many words, transgression is unavoidable, but he who restrains his lips is wise. New American Standard Version. Yeah, valid point. Okay, what do you think, guys? Do you want to go any further? There's about 5 minutes left, at least before 12, I should say. Do we want to kind of, we're not far from the end of the chapter. Do you think we could probably summarize it enough?
I have a tirade to go on at verse 16 I've been saving up. So I don't know. Let's put it to next week because I want to hit this one hard. I think that's something relevant to our society today. We have a society that wants to put you know, young people in charge of things, and because there's a misguided thought about their value, and what I think it really is a manipulation of people that can be manipulated.
Let's plan to do that. So next Thursday, we'll start with verse 16, where Brian will demonstrate verse 14.
That's exactly right. Tirade, the anger of fools. That's right.
A fool also multiplies words. Sorry. But no, I think it'd be good.
One thing I do think is interesting in verse 13, he says, you know, a fool will start and it's just foolish. By the time he's done, it's dangerous, you know, raving madness. Yeah. It's something remarkably bad. And it's kind of interesting how, you know, there are times where you're engaged and, you know, or you're watching someone's behavior and it starts off silly. You think, well, that's just ridiculous. But by the end of their points, you realize that this is dangerous. This is something that can cause some serious hurt.
Well, look at our culture. Just in the United States of America, over the last, I'm going to say 10 years, it goes back farther, but narrowing it down over the last 3 years. I mean, there's
a lot of
things at one time we'd said, that's just ridiculous, but now look at
it. Yeah, silly. 3 years ago, somebody says, hey, there's a little boy that thinks he's a little girl. Well, that's just silly. And today, now I'm thinking, now it's metamorphed into something utterly dangerous.
I'm glad I'm not living now because 1 year for Halloween, I dressed up as a girl. If my parents
are living now, though, aren't you?
Huh?
What? You are living now, though, aren't you?
I'm still living. Yeah, this is a good point. If I pulled the same stunt today and was 14 years old today, and didn't have wonderful parents, I'd have parents who would say, "Oh, that okay. We're scheduling your doctor appointment. We'll start the medications tomorrow, and have you in for a procedure." I really think, and I don't want to go much longer on this, but I want tirade to add to that. Manasseh passed his children to the fire. We've done no differently in our culture. When you stop going back to the whole abortion thing, when that was allowed to be done on the unhindered level, and now coming up today's time, what they're doing to kids, the lack of care and respect and concern for our young is just... It's no different than Manasseh and others who did that. So,
You know, we've seen the same kind of thing, though, a little closer to home. Most of us understand those things, you know, you guys mentioned, but how many times in a church do you have someone who, they just kind of speak what you might call foolishness. And then before you know it, a church is very troubled. And so it starts out. Oh, they're just ridiculous. They're just foolish. They don't really know what they're talking about. And then in a very short amount of time, that can turn into something, I think, as Brian said, something dangerous. Yeah. And so the idea there of talking is folly. It's just, whatever, you know. But you see there that the end of it becomes something much more serious.
So. Well, there's a balance with that, Paul, and I agree exactly what you're saying. As the eldership, you've got to find the balance between saying, all right, this person is still learning and growing and wondering. So he's saying some things that we need to kind of keep an eye on. But you can go to the extreme and says every hint of a word that could be connected with the false doctrine must be eradicated and put down. And so then someone has no room to grow because as soon as they begin to study more and they have these hard questions, they're quieted. You know, they're stifled and they're not allowed to ask and learn through. But at the same time, like what you're saying is right. If you don't keep an eye on it, that one person will come in who will not only do that with intent, but then they'll lead others down a path. That happened years ago with the Crossroads movement.
And so you have to be careful, and the person will show himself to, you know, when confronted, but when the truth is presented, they say something foolish and the truth is presented, they will show themselves to be wise or foolish. And they can't hide it earlier in this chapter. So,
yeah, good point. All righty. Well, then let's plan to start with verse 15 next week. Sound good?
Sounds good.
We good little area? All right. Listen, let me take a moment. Thank everyone for joining us for our study today. I appreciate all the participation, the questions, the comments that you've submitted. And it means a lot to us that you do that. We enjoy trying to study like this, and we primarily do it for our benefit, but we like to share it with you and have you to participate. Now, if you're watching this at a later point in time and you've got a question or a comment about something, don't hesitate to reach out to us. You can send us your ideas or your questions. Let's bring that up right there. Send it to our email, questions@truthfactorlive.com. Or you can use the email address you see there of each individual to contact us directly. And we'd love to hear from you. And if it's within this week and pertains to what we're studying, we will bring it into our study. Now, once we're done with our study through Ecclesiastes, we'll go back to a series of topical studies. And we've kind of laid some of those out, and we'll start sharing them with you once we get probably into chapter 12, I would think. Or maybe the end of chapter 11. So you can be looking ahead and marking your calendars. Some of the things that we'll be talking about hopefully will be relevant and deal with the issues that all Christians have to face, all congregations have to face as well. So, all righty. Well, any other thoughts from Tom, Paul, or Brian? All right. We'll see everyone next Thursday at 11 o'clock a.m. Central Time for our next Truth Factor discussion. Goodbye.